This episode of Travel Today with Peter Greenberg is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
It's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one travel news journalist. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, your travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to the podcast that's done from a different location around the world every single week. One day Canada, the next day Thailand, then New York, London. You just never know. This week we come to you from
Santa Rosa, California, right here in Sonoma County. Of course, the last time we talked about Santa Rosa, it wasn't good news at all. Devastating fires in the region, so much damage, and yet this city has staged a remarkable comeback. It's still coming back. Many of you also know Santa Rosa because of all of their wineries, Sonoma County for that matter as well. And remarkably, very, very few wineries were hit. That's also good news for you who are coming back.
My next guest knows a lot about this county because he lives here. He's the mayor of Santa Rosa, the Honorable Chris Kersey. How are you, sir?
Great. Nice to be here, Peter.
Yeah, you know, we were going to come here about a year ago to do the show, and we got interrupted the way you got interrupted by the fire.
We sure did, yeah.
As a fireman myself, I can tell you nothing is more scary to me, not just than a fire, but a fire that moves with the rapidity that that fire moved.
It was a crazy night. The fire was blowing sideways across 12, 15 miles of terrain in about 3 hours. Incredible.
I know. And it didn't change the fabric of the community in terms of your attitude, but it did change the topography a little bit.
We lost a little over 3,000 homes in Santa Rosa, more than 5,000 in the county, most of them just right outside the city limits.
What's the population of Santa Rosa?
It's about 180,000.
You lose 3,000 homes, considering how many people living in each particular house.
Right.
That's a huge chunk.
About 5% of our housing stock.
Wow.
And we had a housing shortage before that.
So, big challenge for you as the mayor.
Absolutely. It's been my life for the last 10 months. We're still working on it.
By the way, I'm talking to a former journalist, I should tell you.
Yes, I was a newspaper man for 30 years.
Let's hear it for the newspapers that have still survived, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So what are your biggest challenges now moving forward here? Because it's one thing to suffer that kind of a loss in such a short period of time. It's another thing to be able to plan for the future given that loss.
Right. Our main goal was to help the victims of that fire get their homes back, rebuild their homes. We've got about 1,000 permits out of those 3,000 that are in process right now. Some of those homes are built. It's been my pleasure to be there and hand the keys to people moving back into their homes after the fire.
You know, when you think about, you know, these natural disasters, going back to Hurricane Katrina, for example, you know, there are so many people who left New Orleans and didn't come back.
Mm-hmm.
What happened here?
The same thing. Some people have left. We don't know exactly how many will be back once we get through the recovery. But certainly people have left. Our schools have lost about 3% of their enrollment in the past year. So people have needed to find a place to live, and they couldn't all find a place to live here, or they just chose to head somewhere else for greener pastures.
And there goes some of your tax base.
Absolutely. The property tax base has taken a huge hit. You know, we've had huge expenses on the city side to get through. We've got a budget problem because of it.
And yet, the good news, I mean, there always is some good news out of this. Most of the wineries were not destroyed. Your economic base in terms of the reason why people would want to come to Santa Rosa as tourists is still strong.
Absolutely. And tourism is really important to Santa Rosa. All the reasons why anyone would want to visit Santa Rosa are still here. We lost one significant winery in Santa Rosa in the fire, but we have hundreds of wineries here. We have beautiful scenery and terrain, many great reasons to visit.
Speaking of terrain, I know you're a biker.
Yes.
You've got, how many hundred miles, about 100 miles of, or 200 miles, actually, of accessible bike paths?
We have great bike riding, both on the road, on off-road paved pathways, and mountain biking here. This part of the country is where mountain biking was invented. We have a 5,000-acre park right on the edge of town that's Annandale Trione State Park. It's a great mountain biking place.
Are you a mountain biker?
Not as much as a road biker because my bones don't heal as quickly as they used to.
So basically you've had a few falls.
A few, yes.
But the other thing I noticed yesterday in running around, some of your bike paths actually paralleled the Smart Train.
Yes, and the Smart Train is also a new feature. And one of the jobs I've had in my career was working for the Smart Train before it existed. It's only been running for about a year, but it connects Santa Rosa with the greater Bay Area down through Marin County.
Yeah, all the way to San Rafael, right?
Down to San Rafael. Within about a year, it will connect with the ferry just south of San Rafael that connects to downtown San Francisco. So it's a great way to get around the North Bay.
Plus, you have one of the cuter airports.
Yeah, the Charles Schultz Airport, which has daily flights from L.A., Seattle, Portland, Las Vegas, Denver next year. So it's a really convenient way to travel to and from Santa Rosa.
What's the biggest lesson you learned from the fire?
Oh, boy. I'll tell you, I've learned so much about disasters. I tell people I'm earning my master's in disasters. What I learned is how resilient people are, how people can go from losing everything that they've ever owned in almost an instant to turning around and wanting to take care of their neighbors and not worrying about themselves. The generosity of this community has been tremendous over the past year.
And what lessons have you applied?
Well, it's hard to even start to answer that question. Applying the lessons has been being better prepared for the next fire, because as we know that fires are getting bigger, more frequent, and more destructive in California. So we're a lot better prepared now than we were a year ago to deal with something like that.
Now, I know that if you take a look at the varietals of wine that are here, the two biggies are what, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir?
I would imagine that those are provide the most income for our wineries, yes.
But for someone listening to the show who's not been here before, what's the biggest surprise that awaits them when they get here that they're not expecting?
Beer.
Wow, didn't take you long to say that.
Honestly, as well known as this region is for wine, its reputation for beer is equal to the quality of wine that we produce.
Yeah, a little bit later in the show, we're going to be talking to the owner of the Russian River Brewery.
There you go.
I mean, and they're one of the hot spots.
Right, they are. Every year they put out one particular beer, Pliny the Younger, and it's only available for 2 weeks. People come from literally around the world to stand in line in front of that brewery for hours in the morning before it opens, and just to taste that beer that's only available those 2 weeks in February.
Mr. Mayor, are you one of those people online?
I've done it once. I don't want to stand in line for beer all that often, but
was that your campaign
it's
slogan?
An experience.
We'll not stand in line for beer. I just want to make sure we got this right.
Actually, if I can get that on a button, maybe that would be a good slogan.
A collectible. A true collectible.
Exactly.
But you've done it once.
Yes.
Was it worth it?
Well, I got a column out of it. So this was when I was still writing a column for the local newspaper.
Oh, so basically you were writing the column to get the beer.
I was working.
Sure you were. Mayor Chris Gersey, the mayor of Santa Rosa, former journalist, but never one to ignore the opportunity to get a beer.
That's absolutely correct.
But not while biking.
No, you can't ride a bike and drink beer at the same time.
The mountain air, man. The trouble I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston.
425 wineries alone in Sonoma County, and that number is growing. But if you're a local here, you know that you just have to make a little bit of a left turn out of the wine culture and right into the craft beer culture to find out that that's exploding. And joining me now, the co-owner of the Russian River Brewing Company, Natalie Treluzzo. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much for having me today.
Yeah. I mean, you heard my intro. I mean, beer is like exploding here.
Yeah. Craft beer is exploding all over the country.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful phenomenon. My husband and I have been in the industry since 1994.
And what did you know about the beer business before that?
Nothing.
Thank you.
There wasn't a lot to know about it back then. It was a very brand new industry, if you will. And I mean, Sierra Nevada opened in 1980, and not a lot happened until really the mid-1990s. And now it's just exploding.
So how did you get into this?
My husband was a home brewer, so it's really it's a pretty typical story.
So that's how you met him?
Well, I met him because his
that's
his,
a great pickup line. Well, I'm a home brewer. Yeah.
His family owned a winery down the street from the winery that I worked at, and so
see, it started with the winery.
It started
here.
With wine, exactly. So I used to get off work and I'd go over to his parents' winery and we would home brew and then
it was love.
And then it was, of course, it was love at first sight. Yeah. Yeah, so love over beer.
Which wins, beer or love?
Equal.
A nice politically correct answer. But I mean, you had to figure out, first of all, how to make it. Mm-hmm. Second of all, how to make it sustainable, mm-hmm. right? And three, how to market it, because everybody and their mother these days will tell you they're an artisanal beer person.
Yeah, there's thousands of breweries in the United States. In Sonoma County alone, I think we have about 25 craft breweries. California leads the charge. We have the most breweries in any other state. I think we have close to 1,000 breweries just in the state of California, although we are a largely populated state.
But we're talking limited production, though.
Very limited production, but there are some very large breweries as well, like Lagunitas, who is also here in Sonoma County. They make more than a million barrels a year, one barrel being 31 gallons of beer.
Okay, so let's put this in comparison terms. How many are you doing?
We make about 17,000 barrels a year, so we're really not that big in the grand scheme of things.
So we could start the song with 70,000 barrels of beer on the wall.
Yeah, right.
Okay, I just want to be a longer song. But
exactly.
But what kind of beer?
So we specialize.
The hops aren't from here, are they?
No, we actually mostly get most of our hops from the Pacific Northwest, so Washington, particularly this area of Yakima, and also the Willamette Valley in Oregon. So about 95% of our hops come from the Pacific Northwest. We do get some hops from Europe. We do get some French hops and some German hops as well. There are some very small farms locally that are growing hops, but this region used to be a very large hop growing region. It was one of the more important regions, I think, kind of in the earlier part of this century. And so really, hops were kind of the cash crop here until, I think, prunes and then maybe grapes took over. But
by the way, let's discuss prunes for a second. I love the name of your minor league ball club. I mean, holy moly. The Prune Packers?
I have no comment.
You know, it's one thing to say, I'm a home brewer. It's another thing to say, I'm a prune packer.
Well, it's fun.
And with enough beer, the game becomes interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But bottom line is, you're only doing 17,000 barrels, mm-hmm. right? What kind of beer?
So we specialize in hoppy beers. So we make one beer called Pliny the Elder, which is about 60% of our production. It's our flagship beer. It's the beer that we kind of put our name out there, got on the beer map with. It's about 8% alcohol, very, very hoppy, and kind of led the charge in this big hoppy beer IPA movement. We've been making it for about 20 years.
Now, for my listeners, and you talk about 17,000 barrels, do you ship?
We do. We distribute most of our beer, about 50 to 60% is actually sold through our brew pub in downtown Santa Rosa. But we do distribute around California, and we also get some beer up to Oregon, Colorado, and a little bit out to Philadelphia.
Okay, now you have to explain. How did Philadelphia get in there?
We have a very strange distribution model.
Yes, you do.
We do. It's very odd. So we cherry-picked certain accounts that we really wanted to be in. And so when we started distributing, there were only a few really select elite craft beer bars around the country, and in Philadelphia there is a Belgian beer cafe called Monk's, and so if you're in the beer industry, it is an honor to have your beer available at Monk's, and we love Philadelphia. It's such a great beer town too.
But other than going to that restaurant or that bar, you're not going to be able to go to the local store in Philadelphia and buy the beer.
We do have some of our beers available in some stores, not widely available, but a little bit.
The charge for looking at this pamphlet is $3. The charge for looking at this pamphlet and putting it back quickly is $4. Over the seas and all the degrees to anywhere I please.
Oh, I want to get away. My next guest is someone who I spoke to on this air a couple of years ago when we were up here in Santa Rosa. You know, I always like to have the fire chief on the show, no matter where I do the show, because, as I say often and always, who best knows their city than the guy who's been in every hotel, every hospital, every restaurant, everybody's house? Best tour guides in the world are firefighters. And so it's appropriate that I have, for a number of reasons, on the show today, the fire chief from Santa Rosa, Anthony Gosner. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How you doing?
Nice to see you again.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Now, obviously, since we last spoke, you had some pretty busy times last year.
Yeah, we went through the fire in October, so it was...
The fire.
Yeah. It is the fire. There's bigger fires now in Mendocino Complex.
But you'd never seen something like this.
But nothing... There's been no fire that's hit Santa Rosa and the surrounding area like it did last year, so...
You were heavily tasked.
Very, very.
Because it wasn't just your guys on the ground and your women on the ground. You were coordinating the airdrops and everything else.
Well, that was a few days out. The fire came in at 1 in the morning, and we were busy in Santa Rosa. From 6 at night to midnight, we had 20 vegetation fires, 10 structure fires on top of all the medical aids before the fire even came in. And there was three major fires that started within 30 minutes of each other, and the Tubbs is the one that came into Santa Rosa. And it was difficult to know exactly where everyone was and what was really going on, because everything happened at once, and one dispatch center was trying to deal with all of the fires.
Right. And there's such a thing as mutual aid, but even that has limitations.
It had limitations that night. We struggled. We ordered 78 strike teams, which is just under 400 engines, by 12:30 at night, and we really didn't see any equipment till 3-4 in the morning.
Because they had to get here.
They had to get here, so a lot of strike teams were driving through other fires to get to our fire. So
that is so bizarre.
That's how crazy it was that night. It was difficult.
And you know, for those people who want to deny global warming, what was the temperature that night?
It was warm. It was low 80s, I believe. Humidities were...
Which is very high for this.
Very high.
At night.
We very rarely get temperatures like that. You know, we usually cool off 60, 65 degrees. We got the ocean close by, so it comes in. But there's a couple weeks out of the year that we have warm evenings, and that was one of them. Low humidities, high winds.
Yeah,
the winds...
That was not just a warm evening. That was a hot evening.
Yeah, it was hot. We had winds. The winds were supposed to stay elevated, but they came down to the surface, and they were only supposed to be 30 to 40. 40 miles an hour, and they were hitting 80 to 100 miles an hour at times.
Think about that is a true firestorm.
Yeah, it was something else.
So, of course, it's not just the event itself, it's the rebuilding after.
Rebuilding, that's, the fire goes out, right? And then there is a ton of work once that happens. And just the debris removal from the entire, it's not just Santa Rosa, it's the county and Santa Rosa and other jurisdictions. Phenomenal job by everyone. It took a long time. It was a huge, huge process. But we're still dealing with the aftermath of it today and trying to figure out. Some sites were over excavated, so we're trying to make sure everyone's made whole, and just the rebuild process.
But everywhere you look, there's rebuilding going on.
There is. It's clicking right along.
And the wineries are open.
Wineries are open. I think we lost two wineries that night. Everyone thought all the wineries were gone.
Yeah, everybody thought, and I was on the East Coast when this happened. I thought, wow, the entire wine industry is wiped out.
Nope, not at all. Wine industry, they had 90% of their grapes picked. So what we did as the fire service, we made sure they got to go in there and mix their wine so they didn't lose their batches. So we made accommodations.
Ladies and gentlemen, the motto of the Santa Rosa Fire Department, wine first.
Wine first. Yeah, there's when you have an event like that, you have so many competing interests,
yeah,
and you're trying to keep people out and make sure things are safe. And that was one of those things that rose up. It's like, all right, we got to get some people in here to make sure they can tend to their business. Otherwise, it'll be worse.
And so they saved it.
They did. Yeah, no, they saved it. They, like I said, 90% was picked. The 10% that wasn't was not used, clearly.
What were the lessons that you not only learned from that fire, but that you've been able to apply?
Well, for us, we have never seen fire move that fast. We've been to other fires. We go up and down the state and help. We're usually visiting another area. It's usually Southern California that sees fires like this.
Right.
I will say we had a fire on the same basic footprint in 1964. It took 3 to 4 days to get to us, and it burned for 3 to 4 days. When it actually started burning towards us, it was more like 12 to 18 hours, 24 hours to get to us. So we were able to set up and protect in 1964. This fire took 4 hours to burn the 12 miles.
You had no chance.
And it was just a freight train coming, and it was hard to pinpoint when it was going to hit. You know, we upstaffed the entire department early on. We called back everyone in the city. We opened the EOC just because the fire could make it to the city. We had no idea it was moving as fast as it did, because we had some wind in the area, but it wasn't like we experienced when it came. When the fire got here, the wind was incredible.
Of course, in the aftermath of such a thing, you get a chance to review your fire codes as well.
Yeah.
What have you now applied to the new builds?
Well, most of the homes that were destroyed in the fire were built before the wildland urban interface code. So now all the homes will be built to that new standard. So they'll be hardened for the wildland urban interface. They have sprinklers inside. That's for life safety inside.
Sprinklers in the homes?
In the homes.
This is something that's new.
In California, we've had it since the last 8 years. So all new homes have sprinklers.
You know, when I talk about hotel fire safety, when you see it all around the world and you see these devastating fires in hotels, most of the people above the seventh floor don't have a chance. First of all, because most fire departments can't get above the seventh floor.
But
second of all, when you get in there, you find out they got grandfathered in. They didn't have sprinklers.
Right.
Those people were toast,
yeah.
Literally.
Especially on the East Coast, right? Older than the West Coast. So we have sprinklers in a lot of our hotels and the high rises. They all have sprinklers.
Well, thankfully you're ahead of the game then.
Well, we learned from you guys.
Okay, I'll take credit for that. No, I won't. As a fellow fireman, but that's the problem. People don't realize how important sprinklers are.
Yeah, they are designed to save life, right? And then allows us to get in there and put the fire keep it small. So they are important.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel, cruising and playing the radio, with no particular place to go.
Audible.com has more than 150,000 titles and virtually every genre. So check it out for yourself. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial. Every time I come up to Santa Rosa by air, I have an adventure because I get to fly to this particular airport, which I happen to think is the cutest little airport in California. It's not a hub. It's an airport. But it's Snoopy's airport. I hate to tell you, its three-letter code is STS. And of course, it's the Sonoma County Airport. And joining me now, a graduate of the University of North Dakota. We've never had a graduate of the University of North Dakota on the show, so that's a first. John Stout, who runs the airport. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. So let's talk about this airport, because it's one of those airports where, whether you like it or not, you're going to be up close and personal with planes. Because you don't have to walk big distances.
Our walk from the farthest point in the parking lot to the airplane is shorter than concourses at San Francisco.
Oh, it's shorter than the coffee shop at San Francisco. What are you talking about? I love it. You get to the airport. You literally get out of your car. You walk 20 feet. I'm not exaggerating. You're in the main terminal, which is the size of a table.
Yes.
Right? But distinguished, there's a Snoopy in there.
There are several Snoopies.
Explain, please.
After Charles Schultz passed away, the Sonoma County Board of Supervisors wanted to recognize his efforts and contributions to the county. And he had a large activity at the airport. His son flew for him, has an aircraft at the airport, and they passed a resolution naming the airport after him.
So the actual name of it's the Sonoma County Airport, but its other name is?
The Charles M. Schultz Sonoma County Airport.
Right. And, of course, the Red Baron. Is there?
That's correct. So in 2002, I worked with Craig, and we got our official logo with Snoopy in it, and it's the best airport logo in the world.
Not every airport has a logo like that.
Right.
You're an airport that, by design, almost can't get too big.
Correct.
What's the biggest aircraft you land?
737s.
Right. On a tough day.
They're on a regular basis. We do have Sun Country Airlines now serving
right.
Minneapolis,
right.
And they're operating twice a week.
But the airplane I flew in was the Q400 on Horizon,
yes.
Right? Turboprop, and run by Alaska Airlines. And you're now going to get some service from United Airlines coming in.
Yes, in August we announced that United was going to expand their service They were doing San Francisco three times a day. And they're
By the way, the San Francisco flight is what, 9 minutes?
17.
Okay.
Officially the shortest flight in their network.
Hey, listen, plane lands.
That's correct.
Okay, but now they're going to go to Denver.
Yes. So starting March 8th, they'll be adding one flight a day to Denver. It will start out with the CRJ-200, which is the 50-seat regional aircraft.
Right.
And hopefully enough demand materializes before then.
Maybe you get to a 737. Maybe.
They're talking about an Embraer 175.
Okay, we're doing it in tiny steps here.
It's a baby 737.
Oh, we understand. Right. It's a baby 737 with no legroom, but that's okay. Hey, bottom line is, you really can't expand too much.
That's correct.
Right? How many flights a day commercial do you have here?
We peak at 15 a day right now.
That's it?
That's it.
Wow. Now compare that to a major city airport. They're doing like, what, 30 an hour?
More than that.
Yeah, depending on how many runways they've got. How many runways do you have?
Two.
Whoa. Okay. There's hope. What's your biggest challenge?
Right now it's funding. As you said, our terminal and facilities are about the size of a tabletop, and we have had record growth in the last couple of years. We've hit a max of 397,000 passengers last year. Our terminal is 15,000 square feet. It's the smallest commercial service airport terminal in the state of California, and it doesn't meet a lot of the passenger amenity needs, so we've been trying to expand. We'd like to add on roughly 29,000 square feet, and it's a very expensive proposition.
For those people who remember Mayberry RFD, that's been my experience going through security with you guys. So Bonnie Fife is there.
Yes.
Right. And by the way, you don't use TSA officers. You're using rental cops.
Sort of. We don't use TSA. TSA regulates them, but TSA has contracted our airport out to a contractor.
Right. And is that working out okay?
It's working out great. Right. We've had it since Horizon came back in 2007.
The nice thing is there are no lines.
We've changed that myth a little bit here and there. Last summer, we had four departures within a half an hour at 6 a.m. We had 45-minute lines.
Really?
Yes.
I've never seen that happen here. Have you fixed that problem now?
The airlines have readjusted their schedule so they're not within a half an hour of each other.
Because that meant nobody left on time.
Correct.
Exactly. This is the one airport, if you don't leave on time, everybody knows it. I mean, everybody knows it.
Yes.
Right? When you think about it, we talk about the walk from the parking lot to the terminal. The walk from the terminal to the gate, it's not really a gate.
It's a tent.
I love it. I love it. And everything's accessible.
Yes.
Last but not least, I actually like your restaurant. I mean, considering how small the airport is, there are people who just go to the restaurant just to eat at the restaurant. They're not going anywhere.
They have a great patio, so they get to watch the airport all day long.
And they have sushi.
Yes.
Who knew?
Be a rapid change in cabin pressure, oxygen masks will automatically drop from the compartment above your seat, free of charge. And to start the flow of oxygen, pay your flight attendant $75.63. My mother, God rest her soul.
You know, if you just think of the food explosion that's happening everywhere else in the country, and then you apply it to what's happening here in Santa Rosa and Sonoma County, it's almost easy to come up with a sort of like this coexistence relationship between the explosion in the wineries and the explosion in the food scene. And joining me now is somebody who knows all about that. She's the dining editor of Sonoma Magazine, Heather Irwin. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. Thanks for having me.
So which came first, the wine or the food? I would have to say the wine.
Yes, I think that's definitely true. I mean, we've always had great families here doing great Italian family foods and things like that. But definitely the wine came first. And then we kind of grew up a little and we figured out wine country cuisine, which is what we've been known for many, many years.
Okay, stupid question. And I'll say it the right way. What is wine country cuisine?
I know, isn't it?
That's like saying fine dining.
Fine dining. I think we're actually moving away from that. That's sort of what we called the whole farm to table movement before there was a farm to table movement.
By the way, since the caveman, it's been farm to table. I just thought I'd mention that.
It really really has. And it doesn't mean a whole lot to say farm to table anymore. But, you know, here it's really true. We've got our chefs out getting their hands dirty. They know the pigs and the meat that they're getting. They know their farmers. I mean, they're really involved in the whole food system. So I think when we say farm to table here, we really mean it. But I'm going to try not to say farm to table.
Sorry, you just did.
I know. I said it several times.
I know.
But as far as wine country cuisine has been in the past, it was kind of this faux Tuscan, Cal, Ital, you know, French. And it didn't quite know exactly what
it was. Just give me the name of a new restaurant. Faux Tuscan.
Faux Tuscan.
I love it.
Isn't that
Where are
great?
You going tonight? Hey, Faux Tuscan.
Let's go to Faux Tuscan.
Yeah, right.
But I think it's really coming into its own now. We're going beyond the farm to table, and we're at this really interesting intersection in Northern California of being right at the border of the most exciting, you know, food city in the world, I think, which is San Francisco. And then you've got all of our agricultural people up here, all of our farmers. And so it's this beautiful combination of all of those wonderful things where we have some urban sensibilities to it, but we're also really taking the best of what we have. And somebody said something really interesting. We're not making a carrot here. We're not taking something beautiful, transforming it 1,000 times and making it back into a carrot. You know, we're really just saying, let's do as little as possible to this food.
Well, if you can't source it well here, you should get out of the business.
Right. Absolutely true. That is absolutely true. And that's what's so great is a lot of these chefs here have their own gardens. You know, they have farmers that are working for them specifically to grow specific crops.
The chefs are growing for themselves.
They really are, yes. I mean, and a great example of that is Single Thread up in Healdsburg. It was named one of the up-and-coming of the top 50 restaurants of the world. And they have a beautiful farm. They're growing all kinds of very beautiful little Japanese produce and things that are very precious, but they're using it right at the peak moment of its ripeness, of its perfection.
Although I have to tell you something, any restaurant that describes anything on their menu as precious, I won't go.
They won't. They would never call it that. That's what I call it.
Okay, fine. I'm just double checking.
It's very
here.
Precious. It's very precious. But we like precious, right?
Yeah. I'll go you one better. Any restaurant that has things that are in there precious, right? They'll have the waiters trained to say baby leeks.
Baby. Exactly.
I say, no, I want the adult leeks. Where the hell are the adult leeks? I've never seen an adult leek. Did they kill them off that early? I mean,
I know you feel kind of bad for all those little baby things, but actually they're so delicious because they're young and they're sweet and they're
Have
tender.
You ever seen an adult leek?
I have some adult onions in my garden that I let go to seed. They're very pretty, the flowers, I'll say that.
You leave them there long enough, they become trees, you know. I know, but the bottom line is, I get rid of the word precious, just tell right. me it's real, I'll be happy.
It is real, and that's the thing. It is real, and this is really coming from a real place and farmers that are super passionate about what they're doing.
Exactly. So when you look at that explosion and you see the dedication, what are your top three hits here in Santa Rosa?
Oh my gosh, that is such a hard question. I think we have so much that's going on, but you know, something I really want to talk about a lot is, you know, obviously we talked about Single Thread, but I would say that most of our restaurants in Santa Rosa and Sonoma County are using as much local and seasonal produce that they can. But I mean, you've got a great example like Zazu. You know, over in Sebastopol, and they're doing terrific things. You know, they're actually, they've got a truck, and they're literally taking heirloom tomatoes out of the garden right in front of them, slicing them up with their own bacon, and making you a delicious BLT sandwich right in front
of you. That's a real BLT.
That is a serious BLT, probably the best one you'll ever eat in your entire life.
Now, you ready to laugh at me?
Sure.
I actually like the restaurant at the airport here.
Oh, really?
See, I knew you were going to laugh at me.
Well, no, I'm not laughing at you. I mean, I think you really can't go wrong here in Sonoma County. But the thing that's great about that restaurant I really love is I love to go up there and get a mimosa. And
sit outside.
I like to sit in the booth. There's some booze in the back.
Yeah.
Where nobody knows your name. Yes. But it's fun to watch the airplanes come and go. Absolutely.
And you know what? They got great onion rings and they have great sushi. I mean, you never know.
That's
at
all you
airport,
need.
At an airport, I mean, the restaurant's bigger than the airport and it's at the airport.
That we have a very compact airport. It's charming.
Go for the plane, stay for the food.
Exactly.
It's like, really? Yes. I mean, you get both. It's a twofer.
Absolutely.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Flight 438. We'd like to tell you now about some important safety features of this aircraft. The most important safety feature we have aboard this plane is the flight attendants. Please look at one now. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500
more. It's the feet of man who walks 1,000 miles. What do Motley Crue, Kiss, Black Eyed Peas, Katy Perry, Blink 182, Godsmack, Tori Amos, Linkin Park all have in common? My next guest. No, he's not a groupie. He was their chef and went on tour with them over 66 countries over 10 years. But then he got smart, opened up his own place about 6 years ago called Belly right here in Santa Rosa. His name, Chef Gary Rollins. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
That's a lot of work going on the road.
It is. I feel like I'm a gypsy, so I like to travel a lot, and especially on someone else's coin. So it's good to be a part. And I'm a huge music fan, too, which is nice to have, get to travel around the world. And
well, you get the access. You have the ultimate backstage pass. You're cooking and you're rocking.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of the cooking for them, mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's got their own special dietary requirements, or I should say demands.
Yep.
Right. It goes back to the old days of, you know, no red M&Ms in the green room.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the most interesting demand you've had that you had to fulfill?
Oh, man, there's so many. Depends. I mean, every band is different. Every band has different diets. Demands. One of the band members of Linkin Park always has to have kosher hot dogs every single show. And they always have to be the smaller kosher hot dogs. Can't be the bigger.
Are we talking about pigs and blankets?
Yes.
Oh.
Well, I mean, just hot dogs, just
yeah,
in general.
See, you give me pigs and blankets with the honey mustard sauce. I'll join any band.
Right.
Yeah. All right, so that's one.
Yeah. They're all different. I don't know. Tori Amos was on a special diet. Robbie Muro from Godsmack was on a series, like, just white diet, anything white, which is strange to me, but it was an easy...
So what were you making for this white diet?
Well, Tori Amos was on it also. So chicken breast, sour cream, white rice, stuff like that. It was pretty strange. Really, really easy. Baked potato with sour cream.
Okay, so let me see if I get this. I could have been the chef on that tour.
Yes, you could have, probably.
Oh, my God. Baked potato, sour cream. I can't mess that up.
Yeah, but she was probably one of the sweetest people I've ever met, so which is very nice and easy. It was a very easy tour.
So basically, she came up to you and said, could I have a baked potato with sour cream?
Pretty much.
Okay, fine.
Pretty much exactly what you just said.
But what lessons did you learn from that you've applied to your restaurant here?
Everything. I mean, so my restaurant doesn't have a fryer. I don't fry anything in the restaurant. It was one of my main things when I opened the restaurant.
Do you fry anything on the road?
No. I don't travel with a fryer. I have little kitchens. I have an A.
I don't either.
Yeah. I have three different kitchens. One's an A, a B, and a C kitchen. My A kitchen is my Cadillac. It's the one I seriously travel with if we have like 20 shows. My B kitchen is like if we're like in Germany for like 2 shows. And then my C kitchen is like when I'm in Russia or Moscow for 1 show. And if Putin wants it, he can just keep it. It's just a little small box. But,
by the way, Putin wants it. He usually does keep it.
Yeah, he can have it.
Yeah, he can have it.
I leave little notes for him too in it. I really do, actually.
But you know, that brings up a question of how you source food on the road.
So pre-show in the morning, around 6 o'clock in the morning.
You go to the markets?
I go to the markets. So it's 8 o'clock. My driver, translator, sometimes security guard, depends on where we are in the world. Mexico City, Monterey, Kuala Lumpur. I always had a security guard, armed bodyguard with me at all times.
Protect the baked potato.
Exactly. Whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And we'd go shop. And we'd go to these amazing markets, and I get to travel and go to these awesome places in these small little villages or big towns, and I had an unlimited budget. So just make the band happy no matter where we go.
Anybody just want caviar all the time?
Yes. Moscow. I remember the night. I couldn't find it.
Find caviar in Moscow.
Well, the price I only had, I was like, all right, well, I need more money.
Unlimited budget, you just said it.
Well, production, I need more money. I didn't have enough money for the for just one guy. Yeah, it was like beef stroganoff, a bottle of vodka, and caviar. It was like $900. I'm only carrying around 1,000 for 6 guys, and 700 of it was going to go to one guy. So unlimited budget, so I had to do a little.
Is the band still together?
Yes, Linkin Park is. Chester passed away about a year ago. One of my good buddies. I miss him every single day, and I still have voicemails from him. But Chester made me believe that this is how a rock star should be like, and he was just a nice guy, and was the first person in the meet and greets, and was the last one to leave, and just
he spent time.
Oh yeah, he was awesome.
At your restaurant here, I always ask this to chefs, so you're no exception. Mm-hmm. What's the one thing you put on your menu that you thought everybody's going to love this and it completely tanked? And vice versa, what's the one thing that do I really have to put this on the menu and everybody went nuts for it?
Man, good question. Man, I don't know. There's so many different things. So the concept of the belly is just all the countries I've been to influenced in the menu. So when I come back from countries or on a tour, you'll see the menu or specials influenced on on where I've been.
So basically, I go to your restaurant and order the $900 caviar?
Give me a week's heads up, and I'll make sure I have that for you. But yeah, it's always ever changing. I definitely have some staple menus like pork belly to amazing pizzas and stuff like that. So,
and the signature item?
Pork belly and probably your fish tacos.
Amazing.
Surf and turf tacos.
And the one item that tanked?
Jeez, probably 100 of them. But those are no longer on the menu anymore.
Trial and error,
for sure.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Catch us each week as we broadcast from a new location somewhere around the world.